Bernstein.
Hey, buddy.
Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
And this football report is brought to you by State Farm Insurance and by GoGo, the internet in the sky. Visit gogoair.com/Chicago for your chance to win a free in-flight internet flight pass.
Joining us on the Home Run In Pizza Hotline, try Home Run In on the grill at your next tailgate, is a man who writes for the National Football Post and the Chicago Tribune. You see him also on WGN-TV, and you hear him with us Mondays at 5 o'clock, or wherever it's the day after a Bears game, too, right here on The Score. He is former NFLer Matt Bowen. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
You are. Thank God. And all we want from you today after listening to Tony Russo is to speak in complete sentences. That's all we're looking for today, Matt.
Yeah, he sounded like a tired coach. Sounded like he was ready to retire and get rid of the media pretty quickly there.
You know, what I'm sort of fixated on right now is the wow game from the Philadelphia Eagles, because we knew they had it in them. We knew that they had compiled a group of guys that could play, and they finally looked like that. And with the Bears next up on the schedule, that's a thing that, to me, has got the big flashing light on it right now. What did they do? How did it work?
Well, I think you got to give a lot of credit to their coaching staff. You know, coming off a bye week, they had an excellent game plan. But the thing for Bears fans to understand is that that's a completely different scheme that Philly went against last night. You know, Rob Ryan is just like his brother Rex. It's pressure. It's press coverage. It's go after the quarterback. It's leave your cornerbacks out on an island. And if you really study Andy Reid's playbook, it's the same playbook I played against when I was playing for the Skins. Twice a year, the same routes. All their routes want to break between the numbers and the hash mark. They're inside breaking routes, coming back to the middle of the field. Short, compact throws from Michael Vick. Run away from cover one, which is man-free. So you got defenders playing outside leverage. And work that middle of the field. Now, they're a big screen team. Unless they have two players now, well, actually three if you count DeSean Jackson, they can really make broken plays into positive gains when you throw in LeSean McCoy and Michael Vick. But against the Bears, the Bears play a little cover one. We all know they're a zone-based team, and when they pressure, they're still a zone-based team, and that seems to work against Michael Vick when you tell him, look, we're not going to have guys chasing DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, LeSean McCoy when you move them from the core of the formation. We're going to make you force the ball into tight windows, and Lovie's had success against Vic doing that.
You know, it's funny to me because you're right about the Dallas defense. And Ryan, by the way, he's one of those guys. There aren't many in the NFL because it's always such a tidy league. He's just one of those coaches, and he may be fine, but he always just looks like he smells bad. You know, there are certain guys, you know, most coaches now, you know, it's kind of that tidy look. They're all dressed right. Well and all that stuff. So what are the – when you look at the – and obviously – you know, even though in the second half, the Cowboys got some pressure on Vic and they chased him around, and DeMarcus Ware is terrific at it. I mean, what do you do with them then? If you know, and it sounds like you know exactly what the Eagles are doing, exactly what the playbook says, what do you do against them if you're the Bears?
Well, the first thing you have to watch for is the screen game, because they want you to get up the field. They want you to chase Michael Vick so they can throw the tight end screen, which we saw last night to Brent Celek, and use McCoy out of the backfield on the screen, plus throw the wide receiver screen. They're a big screen team, so they're going to tell you, if you want to rush up the field, and this is what they're going to tell the Bears, you want Peppers and Izzy to fly up the field, that's fine. We're going to screen you to death. We're going to keep screening and get our guys in the open field. But obviously, it sounds generic, it sounds boring, but when you rush against this guy, whether you're Julius Peppers off the edge or a safety coming or DJ Moore coming off the edge, you have to rush with contained principles. What's that mean? You cannot take chances. You can't try to beat a guy inside and hope that you get to the quarterback. Because if you open the edge to Michael Vick, it's 20 or 30 yards every time. And then you're asking your young safeties, a guy like Chris Conte, who's never seen anything like Michael Vick in college, to break down and tackle this guy in the open field, that'd be a nightmare. So you have to rush. You have to be smart about how you rush.
One thing that the Bears have talked about, too, is because of the base defense and the principles of their base cover, too, they never really have to turn their back to the play, and it keeps 11 sets of eyes looking upfield. And for whatever reason, the Bears say that has been able to negate what Vic has done in the past, even when he was on Atlanta.
They've done a good job.
You know, what is it about having everything in front of you visually that makes such a difference?
Well, it's huge. I'll go back to when Mike Vick was in Atlanta, and they played us up in Green Bay in that wild card game and beat us to death at Lambeau Field. We played a lot of man coverage, and Michael Vick wasn't as polished a quarterback back then as he is now, when I'm talking about in the pocket as a passer, he was looking to run. And that was fine for him. It was snowing out. We had our backs turned to the quarterback running down the field. All of a sudden, you're covering a guy for 20 yards. You turn around and Michael Vick standing in front of you with the football. You have no idea. So that zone-based coverage, yeah, that's huge because you have the linebackers dropping. You have the corners rolled up in the flat. And they know where Michael Vick is at all times. So if he does break contain, and maybe it's only a six-yard gain instead of 25.
You know, I was going to ask, why you mentioned that game, and I think about that game quite often, Matt. I don't know why, but I just do. Didn't you kind of think, and I don't know what, I want to get inside the mind of a football team, because you look at that game, not only was it snowing, it was cold as hell, as I recall, and they're a dome team, and they're coming to your place. It had to look like this was all Green Bay all night long, whatever they were, just beat the living bejesus out of them, this dome team, and it was exactly the opposite of that.
No, it was, and you know, the side story to that, and part of the problem was we went up to New York the week before to play the Giants, week 17. If we would have won that game, we were the number one seed in the playoffs, home field advantage. We got destroyed by Pennington and the Jets, didn't show up to play, had to play 6 days later. And I remember coming home on the plane, and guys were upset. They didn't want to play 6 days later. They wanted the bye week. They wanted to be fresh for a playoff run. And we had a punt blocked. Brett didn't play his best game. And we stunk on defense. You add that up, I mean, that's a quick exit. I mean, it was an embarrassing loss because it was also the first time the Packers ever lost at Lambeau in the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, that was a rough night.
You would look at it and say, these conditions, because everybody talks about the weather here, and it's wrong. The Bears always lose when it's cold. I mean, the Bears' record in Bears weather is awful. So I was wondering how the Packers' record was in Packers weather. They don't use that term up there, do they, Packers weather?
No, not like they do down here. They just expect it to start snowing, you know, around Halloween up there.
You know, I wanted to ask you, too. You mentioned the bye week, and I don't know, does it mean anything that Andy Reid is now 12-0 after a bye week with us since coaching the Eagles? Is that indicative of anything, or is that just a – I mean, even by any standards, and I know people don't like him, they get on him, his press conferences are – dull and he's all these other stuff, and this team has underachieved to this point. But what does that say when you're 12-0 after a bye week?
That if you get an extra week to prepare, you're pretty good. I mean, that's what it really says. I mean, you can't look past it. I mean, if you're undefeated as a coach coming off a bye week as long as he has, he's obviously done a good job getting together with his coaches, taking input from his coaches, and having his players understand how important it is to come back ready to play. That's part of the problem with these pro guys. As they get a weekend off, some guys come back sluggish. Some guys come back not ready to play. But if you have a great game plan, your team comes back and they're kind of hungry to get back at practice and start working again, then you're going to have some success coming off the bye.
Did you watch Tim Tebow at all?
I did.
And?
That's a problem.
For America,
that's
yes.
I mean, that's the problem. Well, here's the thing, guys. And, you know, I've made this mistake in the past saying it too. But when you try to compare guys, and right now, a lot of the comparison is Tim Tebow and Cam Newton. And we've talked about it before with Carolina when they came up here. They have completely reshaped that offense in Carolina to run the spread to fit the skill set of their quarterback. Okay? Denver doesn't want to do that. Okay? They don't want to do that. Why? Because they're not sure about Tim Tebow. It'd be a lot different if Tim Tebow had the skill set of Cam Newton, but all you have to do is watch these games, understand that Cam Newton is on a completely different level right now than Tim Tebow. Now, I understand he's only started, what, 5 games in his career, talking about Tebow now?
Yep.
But still, when you watch those games, he's missing open receivers. He's not comfortable in the pocket. He's taking sacks. He's fumbling the football. And the biggest thing, despite that comeback last week, you got to give him credit for the comeback. There's no question about that against Miami. But if you're a quarterback in this league, you have to be a consistent quarterback. That's the big word with that position in the NFL, is consistency. Do you move the ball? Do you set up your offense? Do you score points? Do you create field position? You have to do all those things. That's all part of the job. You have to look past the numbers sometimes. And with Tebow, the numbers aren't good either. So I'm very curious to see. It sounds like he's going to start again this week. And they go out to Oakland. That Oakland defense is nasty. Okay, they're going to be all over him, pressuring him. And if he doesn't hit receivers this week, then it looks like John Fox is going to have to go to Brady Quinn. And after that, you know what's going to happen. They're going to draft a quarterback next year, and Tebow will probably be playing somewhere else.
Doesn't he have to do something now, though? How can you, as a coach, how can you look at anybody else on that team, offense or defense, look them in the eye, and say that this guy that we're rolling out in the field gives you the best chance to win as a professional athlete?
No, I agree. And that's part of the issue, too, is selling the locker room. You always have to sell the locker room, and this is our guy. Because as a player, whether you're an offensive player, defensive player, or special teams guy, you have to have someone to believe in when they're down seven in the fourth quarter. And they don't have that in Denver right now. They really don't. So I agree with you. This might be his last shot coming up. It might be his last shot, and then he's going to have to go somewhere next year and be a backup and try to win a job, which is going to be tough. So there's a lot of pressure on him this week to play better football. Because John Fox, I mean, go back to when he was at Carolina, that's a power football coach.
Yep.
When we used to play the Panthers, that was a game you had to get in the ice tub afterwards because they run the ball downhill. That's what they've always done under John Fox. And now to switch to the spread, I don't see it happening. So Tebow's in a rough spot. That's the best way to put it.
Aside from my glee over Tebow, and I can't hide my glee. I'm sorry, but here's the other thing, Matt, that came yesterday, and I watched some of the game. Although I love the Tebow, I just can't get enough of the incompletions. But what the Steelers did to the Patriots, when you see like somebody beat up Tom Brady, you know that's a pretty good formula to beat him. But they manhandled him on the outside. They manned up on him. They did a lot of things against that team because that whoever that guy was yesterday didn't really look like Tom Brady very often.
No, Lamar Woodley was all over them. They were getting pressure off the edge. And in the secondary, I mean, they really just played a lot of cover one. It wasn't very complex. It was, you know, Dick LeBeau is a zone blitz coach. And I've told you guys before, it's different than the Bears' zone blitz. They use that overload pressure. They bring seven or eight guys if they have to get to the quarterback. They're not afraid to do that. But yesterday it was man coverage. We're going to take away Welker. We're going to take away Aaron Hernandez. We're going to beat your guys up at the line of scrimmage. That's basically what they did. I mean, that score, it's not as close as what it really was. The Steelers dominated the game. When you flip over the offensive side, they were basically the Patriots. Throw the ball 50 times, work it down the field, take all the underneath routes, and then what that does, that keeps Tom Brady on the bench. That's how you beat him. You have to hit Brady. You have to keep him on the bench. And go back to when the Cowboys played New England. I know Brady had the great drive at the end to close out the game. But for the majority of that game, Rob Ryan's defense was hitting Brady, too.
Yep.
I think people are starting to understand that you can beat that New England offensive line if you bring some pressure. When you do that, hey, it's just like Drew Brees yesterday. If you don't have protection in this league, and we see it all the time with Jay Cutler, it's not good.
We'll have more with Matt Bowen coming up in just a bit.
Yeah.
We're going to follow up that and get to some Bears-specific stuff in the bye week. Just because they're not playing, it doesn't mean we shouldn't be talking about them. So we'll do that and find out maybe what the Bears should be working on this bye week. So keep it here. More football talk with Matt Bowen coming your way in a moment on The Score.
And the Sarah Boris and Brinstein also brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. We're visiting with our buddy Matt Bowen. And quickly before we get to the Bears, Matt, the thing that I learned yesterday, I did not know this, that never... since Bill Belichick has been the New England coach, has an onside kick he's tried ever succeeded? Now, I mean, you know, I know he's not the special teams coach, but wouldn't you think after years and years of failure and everything, he might stick his nose in and say, can we try this?
Yeah, and then when they tried the onside kick after the free kick, which is basically it's a punter out there. I mean, that was bad. That was really bad. And even the onside kick went about 2 yards.
Yes,
so,
it did.
Yeah. It was a rough end of the game for, you know, what a lot of people consider one of the best teams in football, for sure.
Oh, my God.
So we know
God.
The Bears have been, they were instructed by Matt Bowen to get away from football a little bit, to fly somewhere and do something and get the game out of your head. But now they're at the point where they'll start coming back and start thinking about football once again. And now they've got some potential decisions to make as far as playing time at a couple spots. If Gabe Kareemi comes back, they might have to shuffle around an offensive line that is starting to play a little bit better. And then you've got the wide receiver question of Earl Bennett returns. Who's the odd man out there? How do you see those situations developing?
Well, I know Kareemi is a first-round pick, but I don't think you mess with the offensive line right now. I think they're playing good enough football to win. We saw, you know, when they were over in London, they were able to run the football, able to protect Jay a little bit there against some, you know, good young defensive ends. The problem is offensive line is kind of like a secondary. You know, you start mixing and matching parts, which we saw early in the year. It doesn't add up. It never works that way. You got to have, you know, some consistency in the secondary and on the offensive line. I know he's a good player, but again, he's just coming off injury. I agree, you got to dress him.
Well, you're the first that I've heard say this, because most people have assumed that Gabe Kareemi goes
back to his old job.
He goes back to his spot.
I don't think so, because the way I look at it, I understand he's a first-round pick, but, hey, let him work his way back in. You know, someone else has got to play poorly for him to get back in. That's always the way football I was taught in the NFL, is when you're hurt, hey, your job's kind of up for grabs. And they've had some guys come in, and they've shown the ability to run the football and protect Jay. I would not mess with that at all.
And what about with the wide receiver spot with Earl Bennett? Is Sonsenbacher the guy that's out?
I think so. I think you got to put Earl back in there just because of how Jay has already targeted him in the past. Now, again, when a guy comes back from injury, you can't expect him to go out there and have 10 catches against the Eagles. But you should expect Jay to target him if he's on the field because he has in the past. That's a big thing against the Eagles because they do a lot with their secondary. They have a very talented secondary. They move Nnamdi Asamoah around a lot. That's what they did last night. They're almost starting to use him like Charles Woodson. So if you can get a matchup inside the numbers, you can win. You're going to need that in third and medium. That's usually, you know, third and 4-6, third and 4-7. That's where Jay likes to go with the football. You know, for Sonsenbacher, yeah, he did a good job filling in. He made some catches. Jay obviously targeted him a lot. But I still think Earl's a better talent there. You put him on the field.
You know, getting back to something about this, and John Lynch said it yesterday, about getting, you know, during the bye week, you really need to get away from the game. And you said, now, were you able to do that when you talk? I mean, are we talking like completely away? You're not thinking about it in any way, shape, or form. Is that possible when you do that?
It's hard not to think about it, but I'll tell you this. When I was a rookie, all right, and I'm not trying to throw Mike on the bus here, but Coach Marsh gave us a week and a half off, all right? And we had guys going to the Bahamas and stuff. We were 6-0. We were scoring 60 points on people. We ended up going 10-6. Okay, we had some injuries. I don't think that was the right call to give that much time off. But most coaches give the weekend off. It's usually, you know, get into practice Thursday, get out for the weekend, be back Monday to work. But I do think you need to get away with it. You know, get away from the game, drink some beer, do whatever you got to do, go to a college tailgate. Hey, do something. Go to the movies all day, whatever it is. But try to get football off your mind because then mentally it wears on you. You know, getting a new game plan every week, watching film 15 hours a day. You need, and it's only 3 days, guys. You just need 3 days to relax, enjoy your family if you got kids, go home, see your parents, whatever it is, but get away from the game. So when you come back that Monday, you kind of feel fresh. You feel re-energized. You feel excited to get back to work, excited to put a helmet on again. That's what you want coming off a bye week.
A week and a half?
Yeah, that was a long time.
Oh, golly.
That's like you always say, Coach, could we come back to work sooner?
Yeah. I mean, we got off Sunday after the game, and I'm pretty sure week and a half in football terms, we'd be back next Tuesday. So, yeah, I went to Iowa all week and was, you know, back in the college bar season.
Yeah, I would think guys actually could come close to actually getting out of shape.
Yeah.
I've seen the way some people are able to eat when they are unchecked, when they're not showing up at a practice facility every day, that you could have some big fat fatties do some work.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a long time off, and you know, we thought we were the best team in the league, and we found out pretty quickly after that we weren't.
You know, the other thing I found interesting during this bio, because, you know, they're writing stuff that you're really not, that you probably don't see because there's not time during the week, was a story about Jay Cutler's changing. Is DJ Moore talking about that he thought he was a, and I think I know the word he used when he got here, that a lot of people, and I know a lot of people on the team agreed with that he was a, and how he's changed, how it's become different for him and better for him, and he's a different person. I mean, you've talked a lot about the locker room atmosphere and what you think of your teammates and all that stuff. How important is that? Because I know some quarterbacks don't give a rat's ass, apparently, what anybody thinks of them. But apparently Jay did, at least he's changed somewhat. Is that important for this team?
I think a little bit, but I agree with you. You don't have to love your teammates. You know, when they talk about pro football being a family, they're lying. It's not like college football. And those aren't your best friends. I mean, there's a lot of guys I play with. There's no chance in my life I'd invite them over to dinner with my family. Let's put it that way.
Like who?
No chance. But you have to have some respect for one another because that's what you do. It's a business of winning. Either you win or everyone loses their jobs, coaches included. So you have to have respect for one another. I think the respect factor is more than actually liking a guy.
Okay.
If you respect what Jay's doing, you respect that he's tough, that he keeps taking those hits and keeps trying to throw the football and try to win games, you don't have to be his best friend, but you got to respect what he's doing.
Okay, because it seemed like, you know, there was a – I just thought it was very honest to DJ Moore to say, yeah, I thought he was a – and I thought, yeah, I think a lot of people did. But I often thought, too, that Joe Montana was a guy that wasn't necessarily beloved, that wasn't – that people in the locker – but they believed in him. Not they didn't like him, but they believed in him.
Yeah, and that's the key. I mean, just going back to what we were talking about earlier about Tim Tebow, I mean, you have to believe in your guy. And if you have a guy you can believe in, then – you're going to do some good things. You're going to play hard football. And I always talk about that from a defensive perspective because I think that's the toughest unit to sell because they're going to get pretty pissed off on the sideline if it's keep going three and out. You're turning the ball over. they're going to say some things when you guys are crossing paths coming off the field. But if the defensive players rally behind that quarterback, you're in good shape.
You can't rally behind that, though.
No, that's what I'm saying.
you just can't. That's not a bad rally is what that is.
No, I'm saying here. Yeah. You can do it here.
All right, I want that list of guys you wouldn't invite over next week, all right? Matt Bowen,
I can start it, probably. I'll write down some names.
But he had so many teammates.
He could look off the air and just say yes, no, yes, oh, definitely not that guy. All right, thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, guys, thank you.
Matt Bowen joins us Mondays at 5 o'clock, talk Bears and NFL. Usually he's breaking down what happened to key plays in a Bears game.
I like this, though.